Tell General von Prittwitz that General von François will break off the battle when the Russians are beaten. Lieutenant General Hermann von François, 1st Corps, German 8th Army, Stahlupponen, East Prussia, August 17th, 1914. Hey folks, welcome to the Battles of the First World War podcast and Tannenberg Part 2, Stahlupponen and Gumbinnen. In the last episode, we began setting the stage for the Battle of Tannenberg by looking at the July crisis of 1914, the steady march to war, and the makeup of the Russian and German military machines. We're going to begin this episode by completing the stage setting. We'll look at some of the ground through which the fighting will take place. We'll do our best to match the old German names with the current Polish and Russian ones, as much of this territory is now part of Poland or Russia, and even a little bit of Lithuania. We'll also look at the German and Russian army formations and the commanders set to meet on the battlefields. Finally, we're going to begin the campaign itself. Much of what was East Prussia in 1914 is today part of Poland, which would be resurrected at the end of the Great War. Some of the territory has become part of Kaliningrad Oblast, formerly the German city of Königsberg, which was absorbed into Russia itself after World War II. A part of it has even become part of Lithuania, as just mentioned. But in 1914, this was the eastern edge of the German Empire. Starting from the south, the first area was approximately 75 miles wide and ran from the cities of Johannesburg to Soldau, today known as Pisz and Jadłowo. This was an area on the border with Russian Poland at the time and would be in the invasion path of a Russian army pushing north out of the Polish salient. This was an area of good roads, but with thick tracts of forest and lakes that could make communications hard between units. North of this area are the Jeziora Mazurskie, the Masurian Lakes. The lakes were huge obstacles to an advance from the east, with the only road running between them concluding at Festubojon, a fortress located near today's Giżycko in Poland. North of the Masurian Lakes, there is Insterburg Gap, which runs from Tapiau to Ungerburg. This was open ground, with the river Angarap providing a formidable defensive obstacle. Insterburg is known today as Chernyakhovsk in Russian Kaliningrad. Tapiau and Ungerburg have changed to Gwardyjsk in Kaliningrad and Węgorzewo in Poland. The river Angarap is the Rzeka Węgorapa in Poland today. North of the Insterburg Gap is a mix of hills, swamps, lakes, and forests. The river Daima, today the Dama in Kaliningrad, formed a great obstacle there, and beyond that lay the fortress city of Königsberg. The commanding formation charged with the defense of East Prussia was the German 8th Army, commanded by General Maximilian von Prittwitz und Gaffron. Prittwitz came from an ancient family of nobles, and he had had a solid peacetime career. At the age of 57, he had been given command of the 16th Corps at Metz, the first unit expected to make contact with the French in the inevitable next war with them. That meant that command of such a unit went to someone worthy and capable, which is interesting, given that his detractors tended to paint him as a court favorite and an idiot who got the 8th Army command because then War Minister Erich von Falkenhayn needed to get his insufferable ass out of Berlin. In keeping with what we know as the Schlieffen Plan, Germany would go to war with 8 field armies. 7 of them would be employed in the war against France, and the 8th would be stationed out east to hold off the expected Russian invasion until the victorious forces could come in from the west to help turn the tide. The 8th Army would likely face at least 2 Russian field armies, one from the east and one from Russian Poland to the south. The objective was to fix and destroy one before doing the same to the other. And the moves the Russians made would dictate which army was to be destroyed first. In August 1914, as the Germans awaited the Russians, the 8th Army was deployed in such a manner as to be able to catch both enemy armies when they made a move. In the south, the 3rd Reserve Division was stationed at Thorn and the fortress there. Thorn is known as Torun today. 17th Corps was located around Soldau, today's Jadowo. 20th Corps, the main formation that would be focused to the south, was positioned at Allenstein, Olsztyn today. 1st Reserve Corps was up north at Nordenburg and Angerburg, and 1st Corps was around Gumbinnen and Insterburg. Nordenburg is Ashviani, Angerburg is Vongojevo, and Insterburg is Chernyakhovsk. From here on out, we're going to use the German place names to keep things simple. If you want to follow along on a map, Google Maps is good because you can simply type in the old German name and the search engine will find the correct location for you. Up north, facing towards the Russian border to the east, German units were supposed to be deployed along the line of the river Angerab. The river provided a good obstacle with which to halt any oncoming Russian force. There was a problem, of course, and this problem will provide the kickoff for the military campaign. So here was the problem. 1st Corps, under the command of one Lieutenant General Hermann von François, was not on the Angerab line. His units were 20 miles out ahead, deployed around Goldap and Staluponen. Hermann von François' ego played a part in it, as well as certain military beliefs. Descended from French Huguenots who had left France for Prussia centuries before, von François had always been of the rebellious type. He was a difficult subordinate, tough to control as he tended to veer off and do his own thing, and he was a tough commander. As rebellious as he was, that maverick streak only extended to himself. He controlled those under him with an overbearing personality. Von François believed himself the only person really capable of holding back the Russian hordes about to invade his homeland. He also believed in a now outdated custom that civilians and national territory should be protected. He wanted to fight the Russians as close to the border as possible. This business of hiding behind the river Angerab gave up entirely too much territory to the enemy. The German general with the French name was a crafty one, though. Von François's chief of staff, a man named Colonel Schmidt von Schmitzek, was more of a rule follower and disagreed with von François's making his own deployments. Von François pulled a fast one by leaving Schmidt von Schmitzek and most of his 1st Corps headquarters stationed at Insterburg, behind the Angerab line, where the chief of staff could cause no problems and conveniently stay out of touch with his corps commander. Cavalry units on both sides began to make contact, announcing that this was, in fact, going to be a real war. Russian cavalry under the Khan of Nakhchivan rode forward, but accomplished little in the way of the cavalry's main job, namely reconnoitering the ground ahead. German cavalry fared little better. German airplanes flew their sectors overhead, reporting that Russian First Army elements appeared to be advancing towards the Masurian Lakes region. On the ground, lurid and terrifying tales of atrocities against German civilians began to quickly circulate amongst the troops of the German 8th Army. It was interesting, though. None of the alleged rape and mutilation of German women and massacres of helpless civilians ever happened close by. It was always one or two regiments over where the terrible Cossacks had committed ghastly crimes, or several villages or towns over. To be sure, smoke on the horizon did put paid to the fact that war was happening and that civilians were paying the price. Russian troops entering German territory could not keep themselves supplied without taking from the conquered lands, but they did have a policy of paying for goods at first. But how do you pay a German farmer who has abandoned his farm and all his chickens in terror? And are you really going to use military resources, i.e. your men, to put out a raging house fire caused by some refugee leaving a burning lamp on their kitchen table? By the 16th of August, movements confirmed that the Russian First Army was moving towards those Masurian lakes. The plan was for this field army to pass by the lakes to their north, while 2nd Army was to come from the south and move west of the lakes. The objective was to capture the German 8th Army before it could retreat behind the River Vistula. Commanding the Russian First Army was an incredibly mustachioed Baltic German named Paul von Rennenkampf. A veteran of the squashing of the Boxer Uprising in China, as well as the disastrous Russo-Japanese War of 1904 to 1905, Rennenkampf was seen as the courageous type. He had three corps under his command, the Russian 20th, 3rd, and 4th Corps, deployed from north to south. Two cavalry divisions protected his flanks. Rennenkampf didn't wait for his First Army to be fully mobilized. Once his forces were close enough to being ready, he had them begin marching. The Russian 2nd Army was the larger formation, containing 6 infantry corps. Despite the larger numbers, the Russian 2nd Corps was nearly detached by its tasks of guarding the army's right flank near the Masurian Lakes and maintaining contact with 1st Army to the north. In the Polish salient south of East Prussia, 2nd Army Commander General Alexander Samsonov had the other 5 corps arrayed as follows, from left to right. 1st, 23rd, 15th, 13th, and 6th. The 23rd Corps was split down here with flank guard duty, robbing it of cohesion. Alexander Samsonov was another commander with plenty of military experience, going back to the Russo-Turkish War in the late 1870s. He too had been at the crushing of the Boxer Rebellion, and he had commanded cavalry during the Russo-Japanese War. Where Rennenkampf was considered a hard charger and all full of gung-ho spirit, Samsonov was seen as the steady and efficient commander, if not so dynamic. From the beginning, Samsonov was pushed to get going into East Prussia, even before his forces were completely ready. He would follow orders and launch his troops on the 20th of August. Once on the march, Samsonov would shift his plans. 2nd Army would attack further to the west, a bolder move, but one that called for a deeper invasion of German territory by his and Rennenkampf's troops before they could effect that pincer move that would cut the Germans off from escaping. Back behind German lines, General Prittwitz discovered that von François had much of his corps around Gumbinnen. Prittwitz allowed von François some freedom of maneuver here, as even though the corps commander was out of bounds, he was in a good position. The main Russian force coming from the east was headed toward the Masurian Lakes, while von François was north of them. He was in a good position to crash into the Russian right flank and derail their advance. Von François, though, had his forces much further ahead. On August 16th, gunners from the Ostpreußische Feldartillerieregiment Nummer 6 fired their guns into their own hometown of Eitkunen on the border with Russia as the invaders came on. German units pulled back in a fighting retreat to where von François had a large body of troops, his 1st Division at Staluponen, and a brigade each of his 2nd Division at Golda and Tolminkamen. To use the old cliché, von François went looking for trouble, and he found it. On the 17th, units of Russian General Nikolai Yepanchin's 3rd Corps ran into von François's 1st Division at Staluponen, and the bloodletting began. Both sides were ready to fight, and each gave battle. The Russians began the attack in the morning with troops from 1 Division. Artillery and rifle fire cracked across the land, and machine guns provided the heavy hammering that punctuated the fighting. As the morning went on, more troops from other formations went from marching and right into fighting. The German division commander found himself fighting 3 Russian divisions by midday when heavy artillery sent by General von François arrived. The Russians never hit the 1st Division with an overwhelming blow, despite their mounting numbers. All of the attacks came separately, and the Germans were able to parry them. But the Russians were slowly enveloping the Germans, whose flanks were exposed as they sat ahead of other German units. The howitzers poured round after round into Russian positions and troop formations, but steadily, the enemy began to circle around the German flanks. During the morning, General von Prittwitz and his staff discovered that von François was out way farther than he was supposed to be. Prittwitz ordered his corps commander to pull out immediately and make for Gumbinen. This is when von François supposedly gave the quote that opened this episode. His bravado obscured the truth. Von François was stuck in the battle now. His men could not retreat safely. German 1st Division commander Major General Richard von Konta could feel the squeeze on his command. With all 4 of his regiments in the fighting line, however, he had no reserves left to him. Von Konta ordered a counterattack to throw the Russians off. His regiments dutifully jumped off, attacking their attackers. Clouds of Feldgrau-clad men surged forward, led by their lieutenants and captains, and with rifles at the ready. The Russians stopped them with accurate and heavy rifle, machine gun, and artillery fire. Very quickly, the Germans were finding out that the Russian soldier could fight well. 1st Division's counterattack opened a dangerous gap in the center of its line, a hole some 5 kilometers wide. It was extremely fortunate for the Germans that the Russians, busy trying to turn the 1st Division's flank, never became aware of the gap. 2 companies from the 41st Infantry Regiment rushed in to close what they could of that hole. Numbering less than 500 men, the 2 companies poured fire into the attacking Russians, who outnumbered them locally at 5-to-1 odds. Their act let the rest of the division collect itself. As the division regrouped, these men were left floating in a sea of angry Russians, outnumbered and outgunned. From the south, a Major General von Falk could hear the battle raging to the north. Taking the initiative, something he knew he was supposed to do, he took a brigade from his 2nd Division and marched them north to help his sister division. At 2 in the afternoon that hot August day, Von Falk's men basically ran off the road near Todsunen and crashed right into the left flank of the Russian 27th Division. The Russians were not expecting their flanking maneuver to itself be flanked. Right after being hit on the left by Germans of the 2nd Division, the men from the 1st Division to their front counterattacked again. The Russians had had a hard day of fighting and some 3,000 casualties in the summer heat. The 27th Division crumbled, leaving another 3,000 men to be captured by the Germans. Despite this local victory, von François knew that now it was time to retreat. He ordered his units to do so, and during the afternoon, the Germans broke off contact and pulled back towards Gumbinnen. The unruly corps commander bragged that he had fought off two Russian corps that day, and in terms of units and numbers engaged, he wasn't far off. The Battle of Stalupönen allowed the Germans to see what the Russians' intentions were. And they found that Rennenkampf's 1st Army was pushing much further north than they thought. The Angerap defense line had been the place to deploy. Russian General Nikolai Yepanchin wanted to continue the attack with his 3rd Corps the next day, but the Germans had already disappeared into the west. Drawing their own conclusions from Stalupönen, the Russians continued the advance west on the afternoon of the 18th. The Germans were behind the River Angerap, and a possible flanking right hook could roll them up from the north. General Rennenkampf, though, gave his 200,000 or so men a day off on the 20th of August. His army needed a moment to rest and regroup, as it had been marching, 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 and fighting for 6 days now. His supply trains were falling behind, and potential German supply sources had a way of being lit on fire as the Russians approached. A lot has been made about the fact that Rennenkampf sent his halt orders over the radio in the clear. As Dennis Showalter argues in his book, Tannenberg, Clash of Empires, however, this was not an uncommon practice amongst both the Russians and the Germans. There was simply too much radio chatter out there to capture it all, on too many frequencies, to which there were not enough men to assign to scan. The Germans just got lucky that one of their scanners heard the message and promptly reported it. Von François redeployed his 1st Corps north of Gumbinnen, which lay 25 kilometers west of Stalupönen, as per today's A229/E28 road. Prittwitz sent his other corps forward to assist the battered 1st Corps, as he feared his command being dismantled piecemeal by the Russians. Knowing that his corps would be meeting the Russian right, von François ordered his 1st Division to form a defensive line. He then ordered his 2nd Division to conduct a northerly 15-kilometer night march behind the 1st Division so they could go past their sister division and then swing down like a hammer on the Russian right flank. 1st Corps wouldn't be alone this time, though. 1st Cavalry Division and Landwehr units from the Königsberg Fortress Garrison would screen the north. Marching up were the 17th and 1st Reserve Corps. The 17th Corps was an active army unit, while 1st Reserve Corps was an entire corps completely assembled and staffed within the last 2 weeks with nothing but reservists, the first time this had been done in the German Army. To the south of 1st Reserve Corps, the 3rd Reserve Division and the Landwehr Brigade would be ready to strike at the southern and left side Russian flank. This was all to happen together in order to overwhelm the enemy. The 17th Corps was commanded by General August Anton Ludwig von Mackensen. And if you've read some about World War I or seen a few videos on it, you have doubtless come across Old Mac. One of the more famous photos of him will be posted up on social media, but he's the wizened old German general with a rockin' mustache of bristly whiskers, hawkish face, piercing eyes, and the big black Peltzmütze fur hat with the huge death's head skull and crossbones on it. Von Mackensen had been in military service since at least 1869, when he had signed up as a one-year volunteer. He had seen brief service in the Franco-Prussian War after being activated from university, and afterwards basically became a career soldier. Von Mackensen was a fine cavalryman, and his riding skills led him down a pretty straight path to becoming the then-future Kaiser Wilhelm II's military history tutor. He was the one who showed Wilhelm how an imperial officer should look and act, and von Mackensen played his part well. The young Mackensen was 6 feet tall, looked good in uniform, and attracted the attention of the court ladies. Some of the nobles thought this estate manager's son was getting a little too ahead of his common self. The Kaiser continued to take care of him, and a promotion to the ranks of the nobility solved that getting too ahead of his self issue. By 1914, after years of being an imperial adjutant, as well as posted to key assignments, von Mackensen was given the command of the 17th Corps. 1st Reserve Corps was commanded by Lieutenant General Otto von Below. As Dennis Showalter points out in his book Tannenberg, von Below was an alter Hase in the German army, an old hare. He had a 40-year military career that had seen him mostly in line units, not in staff. Commanding a division under Hermann von Francois had just about led him to the end of his rope. Even lifelong military men have limits. But the army kept him on, giving him command of this brand new type of formation. After a long night march that saw the division attacking Russian ghosts that weren't there, and delaying the main attack due to heavy morning fog, the German 2nd Division executed its swing and came down on the men of the Russian 28th Division. It was 04:30 a.m. They caught the Russians in their nighttime camp, and 2nd Division's gunners plastered the bivouac sites with shrapnel as Russian troops scrambled for cover. The occupied village of Malvishkin was quickly liberated. The Russians had been taken by surprise. Everything was awesome until the Germans kept pursuing the Russians and outran their guns. Then the Russians turned and gave back heavy machine gun and rifle fire that punched into the attacking Germans. Those not cut down went to ground as quickly as they could. One new and disturbing feature of this war was the damage that rifles and machine guns could do. Whole knots of heroes were being mowed down like it was nobody's business. The Russians gave as good as they got this time. They were skilled at digging in quickly. I wonder if this continued into Soviet times, because I've read that a Soviet soldier was expected to be able to dig a deep enough scrape in 5 minutes that would give him a 50-50 shot at surviving a tank running him over. That's a bit of an aside. From quickly dug foxholes deep enough to provide cover, and nearby houses and barns as easy fortifications, the Russians poured fire back. Fighting devolved to struggles in local villages. The 1st and 2nd Divisions pushed in together. The Germans had had little training in urban fighting, but survival became a great motivator to quickly adapt and overcome. The Russians seemed to quickly put together defense networks that incorporated buildings, farms, and copses that mutually supported each other. The Germans would clear a house to find incoming fire from another one down the street. This was a fight that turned ugly and exhausting, with knives and rifle butts being the primary weapons here. Many Russian troops opted to burn alive in houses and cellars rather than surrender. A hard fight developed at Brakuponin village, where elements of the German 1st Division shot, stabbed, and clubbed it out with men of the Russian 28th Division. After hours of nonstop attacks by the Germans, the Russians began to fall apart. Within a short time, the regiments began to disintegrate as the Germans kept clawing at them, and by afternoon, the Russian 28th had lost half of its fighting force. Then, something unexpected and terrible happened. In a bid to help, 2nd Division's guns began blasting the battlefield to clear it of Russians. Only the shells rained down on German troops instead. The resulting chaos saw not only German soldiers killed by their own guns, but men running in every direction for safety. It took until mid-afternoon to reorganize the shaken troops and get them up to the road between Gumbinnen and Kussen. By this time, 1st Corps had no reserves left and could advance no further. 17th Corps came off a night march through columns of pitiful refugees and cold rain to launch an attack south of 1st Corps' lines around 8 a.m. Von Mackensen had been informed by 1st Corps headquarters the night before that the main Russian thrust was against von Francois. There were only screening forces to the south of 1st Corps. No one bothered to do much recon to confirm this, other than some recon flights that found little. There were no orders from 8th Army for the two corps to work together, so Lieutenant General von Mackensen used the incomplete information he had and gave his orders. 17th Corps' divisions, the 35th and 36th, would attack northeast and catch the attacking Russian corps flank and then rear. 17th Corps instead blundered into General Nikolai Yapanchin's 3rd Corps, which the recon pilots had missed entirely. Regiments of the 35th Division attacked through Todshunen and were north of the town by 9 a.m., when a brigade commander acted on a 1st Corps liaison officer's suggestion to pivot north and cut off the Russian 20th Corps from the rear. That brigade walked into a deadly box where Russian artillery hosed them from three sides. Its sister brigade was also stopped in its attack shortly thereafter. The Russians showed that they had learned a lot since the war in Manchuria against the Japanese. Their artillery was well-trained, and they had a knack for locating German gun batteries. They pumped out round after round into the ranks of the raw German soldiers. 17th Corps' 36th Division crashed into two full Russian divisions north of Walterkamen, where three regiments attacked into the Russian lines as incredibly heavy artillery and rifle fire cut swaths of their ranks down. Losses among junior grade officers were high, leading to men standing around without leadership once a line of hasty trenches or an enemy position was taken. Contact with the enemy after such a disastrous and bloody start led to some savagery amongst the Germans. Russian prisoners were shot until some conscientious officer stopped his twitchy men, when prisoners were taken at all. Von Mackensen's divisions began to fall apart by noon. An unattached regiment sent back to him, the 129th, came up and attacked to the right of the 36th Division. It was looking for a Russian flank. Within a few hours, the regiment had broken apart into several unconnected groups, fighting without strategy to clear nearby buildings and woods. Russian artillery and rifle fire remained as fierce as ever, despite heavy Russian losses as well. It got worse for 17th Corps. Supporting howitzer units arrived on the field and, in short, began shelling their own men. By mid-afternoon, the soldiers of the 17th Corps broke after their introduction to 20th century combat. At first in small groups, then growing larger, the Germans began to make for the rear and safety. Within a short time, nearly the full corps was in flight. In a testament to the vicious nature of the fighting of the morning, the Russians stayed in their positions and did not pursue. At 5 p.m., von Mackensen ordered his units to pull back behind the river Rominta. He had lost 8,000 men in a few hours and had shattered his corps on faulty information, and he had nothing to show for it. South of 17th Corps, Lieutenant General Otto von Below's 1st Reserve Corps marched from the roads and onto the battlefields as well. The Corps' objective was to advance to Goldup and cover 17th Corps' right flank. Von Below did not make the same error as von Mackensen. 1st Reserve Corps sent out its cavalry to reconnoiter. But von Below's cavalry did the same as 17th Corps' recon planes. They, too, missed not one, but two advancing Russian corps. 1st Reserve Division was attacked by the Russian 30th Division, part of General Erez Khan Aliyev's 4th Corps. The German reservists had just stopped for lunch when they came under fire from their flank. If he heard the name of that Russian general, Erez Khan Aliyev. Aliyev was an anomaly within the Tsarist military system, as he was a Caucasian Muslim. The Russians delivered a powerful and well-coordinated attack, with artillery supporting infantry as the ground pounders sought to find an open flank. The German 36th Reserve Division came onto the scene, attacking the Russians and throwing them back. In its attack, it went off in a different direction from its sister division and lost contact with it. When the fighting ended, both divisions considered themselves lucky to be largely still in fighting formation. 1st Reserve Corps would soon have to pull back in haste with the mess that was the 17th Corps. As the Battle of Gumbinnen ended that day, General Rennenkampf thought his troops had done well. His 1st Army had won a solid victory against the vaunted German military machine. It was the Germans who had retreated first, so his soldiers could claim the win, even though his own units had been close to calling for a retreat as well. His men had attacked well, showing coordination and grit. But they had taken some heavy losses, well over 15,000 men. The ferocity of the fighting and the resulting casualties had caught him and the opposing Germans off guard. The Germans were allowed to retreat, and Rennenkampf gave his army the next 2 days to rest and refit. This, again, gave the German 8th Army time to disappear. When the Russian 1st Army's cavalry moved out again, the Germans were again largely gone. On the other side, General Prittwitz was panicking. The German 8th Army had been defeated in the field. Immediate reports showed that 17th Corps was out of action, and God only knew how long it would be before they could be back online. In truth, it wouldn't be long. 1st Corps was worn out after days of fighting and marching, thanks mainly to its egotistical commander. A morning report to Oberste Heeresleitung, Army High Command on the Western Front, reported that the operations around Gumbinnen were going successfully. A call later that afternoon had Prittwitz freaking out that everything was falling apart and that he was pulling all units back behind the Vistula. There was further bad news. From Russian Poland, Alexander Samsonov's 2nd Army had crossed the East Prussian border on a 60-mile front. General Prittwitz had only the 20th Corps there to stop 5 fully armed Russian infantry corps. 20th Corps headquarters was reporting that, at their rate of march, the Russians would likely be engaged in battle with them within the next 24 hours. Questions, comments, or concerns, please don't hesitate to contact me at redonepodcast@gmail.com. get at me on Twitter at WW1Podcast. Check out the BFWWP website, FirstWorldWarPodcast.com, for some photos. And check out the Battles of the First World War podcast page on the Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. Talk to you again soon. Take care.